My name is Lee Brasington. I guess you probably already figured out I'm an American from my accent. And it's very nice to be back here. I have to admit, London is one of my most favorite cities. And so it's great being back here and having a chance to share the Dharma. If you can't hear me, you know, stick your hand up to your ear or something, and I'll try and remember to speak louder. So tonight's talk is on the jhanas. So what are they and what are they good for? I guess we should start with some context. The Buddha's teachings could be divided into three categories: sila, samadhi, panya. Sila refers to ethical behavior, the main practice there being the precepts, but in general, living your life in a way that doesn't cause harm to yourself or others. Samadhi, usually translated as concentration. I like the word indistractability, but you guys invented English and you didn't make up that word, but that's what it actually, samadhi means, the ability to not become distracted. So we'll use concentration, but realize that samadhi really means indistractability. And then panya, wisdom practices. Most of what you think of when you think of meditation is investigating the nature of reality so that you gain wisdom. It turns out it's much nicer, much less dukkha, if you can act in harmony with the way things are instead of at cross purposes. And so this is what the wisdom practices are about, to give you insight into the nature of what's actually happening. The jhanas fit in the middle category. The jhanas are, we could say, eight altered states of consciousness that are brought on by concentration and yield even more concentration. In the suttas, there are four jhanas and four immaterial states. But from time to time, we do find them in a series of eight successively more concentrated states. And by the time of the Abhidhamma, say 200 years after the Buddha's death, they were simply being referred to as the eight jhanas. And it's a convenient way to talk about this series of eight concentration states. Basically, the sila, samadhi, panya, if we put it into the vernacular, would be clean up your act, learn to concentrate, use your concentrated mind to investigate reality. And the jhanas are the way of concentrating your mind. They require a certain level of concentration in order to generate them. In the later literature, such as the Visuddhimagga, which dates from, well, let's say, 800 or 900 years after the Buddha's death, there's a phrase called access concentration. It means something slightly different in the Visuddhimagga in the sense that they're describing different states than are described in the suttas, but the phrase is quite good. It's sufficient concentration to give you access to the jhanas. The suttas describe abandoning the hindrances. Hopefully you're familiar with the hindrances. Sense desire, ill will and hatred, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and skeptical doubt. Or we could say wanting, not wanting, too little energy, too much energy, and doubt. The suttas say that these have to be set aside in order to generate the concentration necessary to enter the jhanas. It turns out that there are a number of practices that you can do that will generate this basic level of concentration such that the hindrances are temporarily suppressed. They don't get fully uprooted until you're, well, quite a long ways on the spiritual path, the last one going only at full awakening. So it's a good thing you don't have to totally uproot them before you get started. You just need to temporarily suppress them. There are about 30 different methods given in the suttas that can be used to generate this access concentration. The most common method that's discussed, and the one that's probably taught the most in the West, is mindfulness of breathing. Anapanasati, in-breath, out-breath, mindfulness. So paying attention to the physical sensations of breathing. If you're going to generate concentration, it's helpful to pay attention at the nostrils. The touch sensation of the air going in and out is more subtle than paying attention at the chest or the belly. Since we're trying to generate strong concentration, it works a little better if you pay attention to a more subtle object because you have to concentrate more. It's harder, it's easier to stay with the breath in the belly because it's a grosser movement, but it doesn't generate the concentration as deep as quickly, though it can be used. And you want to pay attention to the natural flow of the breath, not controlling it. If you control it, it's easier to pay attention, but it doesn't generate the concentration. So you're just observing what goes on. What usually happens, you put your attention on the breath, and you get distracted. When you find yourself distracted, it's helpful to label the distraction, a one-word label, maybe two words, never more than three. And the first label is always correct. Spend zero energy trying to get the perfect label. So planning, angry, wanting, hungry, nonsense, whatever. You'll get the right label 90% of the time. This has two benefits. One, you get some idea of where you habitually go. Do you get distracted more into the past or the future? Notice how seldom you get distracted into the present. Then it's very important, once you've labeled the distraction, relax and bring your attention back to the breathing. And you do this over and over again until eventually your attention settles on the breathing and you're not getting lost anymore. There's a sense of a shift. There might still be wispy thoughts in the background, but they don't pull you away. You know each in-breath, you know each out-breath, okay? And you're fully with the breathing. And the thoughts are more like, yeah, this is good. Is this access? Rather than, when I get to Spain, I'm going to, or whatever, all right? Now, the breath is probably the most common way that people generate access concentration, but as I said, there are many other methods. Metta, loving-kindness meditation, can be used. Simply do the loving-kindness practice that you know, whatever form that is, for, let's say, half an hour. And if at that point you're not getting distracted and you've actually generated a nice feeling, then possibly you're at access concentration. Mr. Goenka in the West, who just recently died, has made the body scanning method quite well known. And that can be used to generate access concentration. But what you're looking for is some method of getting your mind quiet enough and settled so that you're not becoming distracted. There are some possible signs of access concentration arising. Sometimes when you sit down to meditate, you get a light show, you know, purple blobs, laser lights, whatever. Ignore it. Right? It's just your brain sort of settling, and it shows up visually. But when you get really settled, maybe you'll get a diffuse white glow. It's like you're sitting in a room on a cloudy day with your eyes closed, and the sun comes out, and it just gets brighter. Or somebody comes in and starts pushing up the dimmer switch. But this is just your mind settling. We have some idea what's going on physiologically, and it's that you're stopping inhibiting the firing of the neurons in your visual cortex as you get quieter. Right? Your visual cortex is part of your brain. And as you get quiet, all of your brain quiets down to some extent. And that includes the visual cortex. And as it quiets down, what you start seeing is the diffuse white light. So that's a sign of good concentration. Some people see it every time they get concentrated. Some people never see it. Most people see it sometimes, and sometimes they don't. Another sign of concentration, if you're using the breath, is that the breath gets very shallow. It seems like you're hardly breathing at all. Or maybe it seems like you're not breathing. You can't detect the breathing. The natural thing to do at that point is to take a nice deep breath and get the breathing going again, which turns out to be exactly the wrong thing to do. The onset of the first jhana does seem to be accompanied by a buildup of carbon dioxide. And so by taking a nice deep breath, you actually take yourself away from the onset of the jhanas. There's a trick. It's actually mentioned in the suttas, though it doesn't say, here's the trick. It talks about gladness. And from gladness, there arises piti, which is the primary component of the first jhana. The trick is, if you're using the breath and your breath gets very shallow, or you can't find it, is forget about the breath and shift your attention to a pleasant sensation. Or if you've been at access concentration for, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 minutes, and you're really settled, you're not getting distracted, then forget about the breath and shift your attention to a pleasant sensation. Now, you might be wondering, what pleasant sensation? Well, if you can somehow bring yourself to smile when you meditate, you only have to shift your attention 1 inch. The smile is pleasant. Even if you put a fake smile on your face when you sit down and you keep putting it back when it falls off, by the time you get to access concentration, it will feel genuine. It doesn't have to be a big grin. I mean, the Buddha statues, they all got the little smile. It's not just for artistic purposes. It's a teaching thing. You should put the little fake smile on your face when you meditate. Then when you get to access concentration, drop the object that you use to get to access concentration and focus on the pleasure of the smile. Now, me telling you, smile when you meditate, maybe you don't feel like smiling. I didn't feel like smiling when they told me to smile when I meditated. But if you can bring yourself to do it, it will be beneficial. But if you don't smile, then you're going to have to find another pleasant sensation. It turns out the smile works really well when it works, but it only seems to work for about 25% of the students I teach. The most common place people find a pleasant sensation is in the hands, sort of a warm, tingly glow. Put your attention on the pleasantness of that pleasant sensation. If you're doing metta meditation, you probably find a nice, warm feeling in your heart. Put your attention on that. Other possibilities include the third eye, top of the head, top of the shoulders. Actually, you name a body part. And I've had some student that once they got to access, found a pleasant sensation in that body part and was able to put their attention on it and stay undistracted until they entered the jhana. So, review. Pick an access method like mindfulness of breathing. Start practicing. When you get distracted, no big deal. This is what our brains do. Label the distraction, relax, come back. Keep doing that until you settle in. And then stay at access concentration for a bit. Don't rush. Give it 5, 10, 15 minutes. Or if the breath disappears completely and there's nothing else to do, then switch your attention to a pleasant sensation. And now comes the really difficult part. Do nothing else. Just stay focused on the pleasantness of the pleasant sensation. Now, by the pleasantness of the pleasant sensation, I mean the fact that it's pleasant. It's not neutral or unpleasant. It will be located somewhere in your body, so you're looking at part of your body, the smile or wherever, but don't focus on the location as much as enjoying the pleasant sensation. And it's not about how long it's been there or how strong it is or whether it's increasing or decreasing. It's really giving yourself to fully enjoying the pleasant sensation. If you can do that without becoming distracted, then eventually the pleasantness of the pleasant sensation begins to increase, slowly at first. And then all of a sudden it takes off and takes you into an obviously altered state of consciousness full of, well, the Pali words are piti and sukha, usually translated as rapture and happiness, maybe better as glee and joy. The words don't really help that much. If you follow the instructions, when the pleasant sensation begins increasing, and if you don't mess with it and just let it do its thing, yeah, the piti and the sukha will come on, this physical uprush of pleasant energy and this emotional sense of joy, happiness. That's the first jhana. If you can sustain that experience of piti, sukha, and sustain your attention on it, then you've arrived at the first jhana. Unfortunately, what happens is you get concentrated, you know, you're at access, you're not being distracted by the hindrances, and you hang out for a while, and you put your attention on the pleasant sensation, and either you go away or the pleasant sensation goes away. You need to be well concentrated. The pleasant sensation is far more subtle than the breath. I mean, the breath is really exciting. It comes in, it goes out, it's always changing. Pleasant sensation is just sitting there, mildly pleasant, not doing anything. So you need good, strong concentration. And you just have to sit there enjoying it. If you start commenting something's supposed to happen, it won't happen. Or if something does start happening and it's like, oh, something's happening, it'll quit happening. Right? You just have to fully give yourself to enjoying the pleasant sensation. Now, if you get distracted, come back to the pleasant sensation. If you get distracted a lot, yeah, you didn't have enough access concentration. Back to your breath or whatever your access method. Deepen the concentration, try again. Of course, if the pleasant sensation goes away, yeah, back to the breath or whatever. Let it build up. So you've got to get sufficient access concentration, and then you have to be very patient with the pleasant sensation. It usually takes people on a 10-day retreat, about half the retreat, to get settled enough for this to start working. It's not a do-it-yourself-at-home project, unfortunately, for most people. Now, if you have a really good daily practice and a low-stress life, maybe so. But then you live in a large urban environment, and yeah, I understand. But on a retreat, it is possible to get quiet enough so that you do generate nice deep concentration, and the piti and sukha arise. Now the sutta description is, secluded from sense desires, secluded from unwholesome states of mind, one enters and remains in the first jhana, which is with piti, which is with thinking and examining, and is filled with rapture and happiness. So the thinking and examining is the Pali words vitaka and vichara. By the time of the commentaries, the Visuddhimagga, so 8 centuries after the Buddha, those words had been changed to mean initial and sustained attention to the meditation object. Which, true, you have to have, but it's not what the words meant to the Buddha. At the time of the Buddha, those words meant thinking and more thinking. Simply that. The background thinking that I mentioned might still be there in the access concentration doesn't go away in the first jhana. You're still there and it's like, oh wow, this is pretty tense. I'm not sure what I want to do. How long should I stay here? Or things like that. Okay. The piti can come on quite strongly. It can be so strong it's like you put your finger in the electrical outlet. That kind of energy when it's really strong. The idea is to sustain it at some level that is, shall we say, bearable for If it's mild, 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. If it's quite strong, then maybe a shorter period of time. There's a simile that's given in the suttas. It says, imagine a skilled bath attendant taking a metal basin and pouring in soap flakes and then just the right amount of water and mixing the soap flakes in the water until you have one homogeneous ball of soap. So at the time of the Buddha, you didn't go to Sainsbury's and buy a bar of soap. You had your skilled bath attendant make the soap for you. This mixing of the soap flakes in the water is the frenetic energy of the first jhana. It's a really intense place. The PT is make you sit up straight, make your hair stand on end. It's quite intense. And the sukha, the happiness, the joy, can be quite intense as well. You might have quite a big smile on your face, teeth showing, the whole works. After you've been there, well, if it's mild, 5 or 10 minutes, if it's strong, maybe even as little as 30 seconds to a minute, then you can move on to the second jhana. There's a trick also for moving to the second jhana. Remember I said don't take a deep breath, it takes you away from the PT? To move to the second jhana, because it has inner tranquility and unification of mind, you do want to take that deep breath and calm the PT down. The PT is not tranquil. Nothing about it is tranquil. But when you've experienced PT and then calm it down, it puts you in a very tranquil space. And taking the deep breath will turn off the PT, let all the energy out with the exhale, and now focus on the sukha, on the joy. The suttas say, with the subsiding of thinking and examining, by gaining inner tranquility and unification of mind, one enters and remains in the second jhana, which is without thinking and examining, and contains piti and sukha born of concentration. So now things are calmed down with the inner tranquility, and the mind becomes much more unified. The thinking and examining has gone away. Ideally, there are no more thoughts. The mind is unified around focusing on the experience of joy or happiness. For most lay people learning the jhanas on a 10-day, 2-week course, they're not going to get that level of concentration, but the thinking will subside more. It'll get quieter. And the mind really becomes unified. It's like if we had a piece of paper and we put a ball bearing on it. To keep it on the piece of paper, you'd have to really pay attention, right? At the second jhana level, it's like You punch down, and now there's a valley in the paper, and you put the ball bearing in there, and it's stuck there. You can wiggle it. It's not going to go anywhere. That's what happens as the concentration deepens as you move into the second jhana. It's a very happy place. It's like it's your birthday. And somebody gives you a really nice present. You open it up, and it's like, oh, wow, he's wanted one of these. This is great. Thank you. Get that kind of happiness, but not generated by anything external. Generated simply by your concentrated mind. Our natural state of mind is radiant and happy. If we stop covering that up, that's what shines forth. If you get concentrated enough, you stop covering it up, and this is what happens. I mean, you're not putting the happiness in there. The neural circuits for happiness are there all along. All you're doing is stopping them from being deactivated by getting quiet, and then they become activated. And so in this second jhana, you're just hanging out with a big smile, maybe no more teeth showing, and feeling quite happy. There is a simile that's given. Imagine a mountain lake where there are no streams coming in from the east, the west, the north, or the south, and not even any showers of rain. And yet at the bottom of the lake, there's a spring of cool, clear water. The cool, clear water from the spring would totally permeate the lake, totally fill the lake, totally saturate the lake, so there would be no part of that lake not filled with the cool, clear water. This is an incredibly accurate picture of what it feels like to be in the second jhana. There's this spring of happiness and this just upwelling of joy, and you're just sitting there being very happy. It's not totally steady. It comes up a little stronger, and then it gets a little weaker, and then it comes back, and a little variation in it. This is because the piti has not totally gone away. It predominated in the first jhana, and now it's more in the background. Really, we could say the move from the first jhana to the second jhana is a foreground-background shift. The piti predominating in the first jhana, the sukha more in the background, and then you take the deep breath, and now the sukha predominates, and the piti is still there in the background, but more rocking and swaying than vibrating and your hair standing on end. So when learning the jhanas, it's good to hang out in them for an extended period, from 2 and higher, say 10 to 15 minutes, and when you can stabilize your attention that long on this more subtle object, then you can move on to the third jhana. It says, with the fading away of piti, the rapture, the glee, by remaining imperturbable, mindful, and clearly aware, one enters and remains in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, happy is one who is equanimous and mindful. And one sits suffusing one's body with a happiness free from rapture. So now we have just the sukha left. We also have mindfulness, imperturbability, and equanimity. And it says it's happy and equanimous. So what is happy equanimity? Well, it turns out the best word is contentment. Wishlessness, satisfaction so strong that if Mick Jagger had been practicing the third jhana, he couldn't sing that song. Okay? You're just completely satisfied. Again, it helps to take a breath because that turns down the piti, which you've got to do to get to the third jhana, and let the intensity level of the joy and happiness, the sukha, begin decreasing. It might be helpful to remember a time when you were very contented. I don't know, you just eaten a perfect meal, you didn't overeat, and you don't have to wash the dishes, right? You know, just that, Okay, remember the experience like a quarter second and pluck the feeling of contentment out of it. And let your mind settle into that contented feeling. Now that's the object of your attention. At this point, there should be maybe a little Buddha smile because you're so contented, and no piti. It's very still. And it's nice to be there. One experiences happiness because one is equanimous and mindful. You notice the objects are getting a bit more subtle. There's nothing subtle about the piti of the first one. Nothing. The second one, the joy, it's a little more subtle. Now we're down to contentment. That's even more subtle. So you're focusing on more and more subtle objects, building your concentration stronger, and then moving on to a yet more subtle object. There is a simile for the third jhana. Imagine a lotus pond where they're growing blue, white, or red lotuses that come up out of the mud but do not come above the surface of the water. They would be totally saturated with water from their tips to their roots. This is a very still picture. The lotuses aren't up waving in the breeze or bobbing on the water. They're underwater. It's very still. And yet they're completely filled with the water, which you're filled with the contentment of the third jhana. So again, you hang out being contented for 10 to 15 minutes. When you're good enough at that, then you can try for the fourth jhana. The third jhana, my teacher, the late Venerable Ayakema, described as like sitting in the mouth of a well. You're a bit isolated from the world around you. To get to the fourth jhana, let go and drop down the well. In particular, let go of any pleasure that still exist in the third jhana. Being contented is pleasant, all right? Let go of that pleasantness. As I said, you might have a little Buddha smile. Just relax all the muscles in your face. And hopefully when you do, there's a sense of things starting to drop down. Go with the sense of dropping. Now, it's not dropping in a free fall. It's more like drifting down. Drifting down the well, or drifting to the bottom of a swimming pool, which is another image that might be useful. It says that with the passing of pleasure and pain, as with the previous passing of joy and grief, one enters and remains in the fourth jhana, a state beyond pleasure and pain, that contains mindfulness fully purified by equanimity. One sits suffusing one's body with the pure, bright mind. Okay, so let go of the pleasure of the third jhana. Now, it doesn't mean there was pain in any of the jhanas. But there was joy in the first two. There was no grief. So let go of the joy and the pleasure that was there. Let your mind go to neutral. Let go of anything you're hanging on to. It definitely requires more letting go to move into the fourth jhana. And just let your mind sink down. You want to go to a place of equanimity, but equanimity is not a good target. Better to focus on quiet stillness. If you focus on the quiet stillness of your mind, then you will be focused on equanimity. Right? It talks about the pure, bright mind. When I was first learning the jhanas, I didn't quite get what that meant. Pure, yeah, because not much going on in the mind. But bright, I was experiencing it as dark. Like you just close your eyes and it's dark. So I didn't get what the bright was. There is a simile. It says, imagine a man covered from the head down by a white cloth, so there was no part of his body not suffused by the white cloth. Okay. I could get the sense of isolation of the fourth jhana because, yeah, you're down the well. Your hearing may get much quieter. You're not noticing the sounds. Don't check to see if your hearing got quieter, though, because it will then come right back. But afterwards, you might notice, I wasn't hearing the birds or anything. So the isolation of the guy with the sheet over his head, but why a white sheet? It seemed important, this bright white, but I didn't get it. And actually, it was many years before I understood what was going on. I started practicing the jhanas, I started stumbling into the first one in 88, and then I learned 2 years later from the Venerable Ayakema, really what I was doing, and learned the first five, and then the next year I learned 6, 7, and 8. But it was, that was 91, so it was 15 years later before I actually figured out what the sutta description was talking about. I was on retreat with the Venerable Pal Ok for a month. He's a jhana master from southern Burma who teaches the jhanas as described in the Visuddhimagga. Very, very deep states of concentration. And very quickly he had me sitting, said, sit for 3 or 4 hours and follow your breath. Okay. Well, 3 or 4 hours of following my breath and created very, very deep access concentration. Now, I never got anywhere near his jhanas. But sometimes after I'd done the work that he was telling me to do, I would smile and the jhanas that I knew would come on intensely strong. The PT was so intense, I was a little worried my head was going to pop off. But it would pass, and I would be in the second jhana as I knew it. The PT would come back from time to time, but it would take quite a while for me to be able to move to the third. It was just such a non-stop joyful place. My mind wasn't going to go anywhere. It was just locked into this sense of joy because I was bringing much more concentration to the experience. And then move on to the third, infinitely contented, and again, not able to let go of the pleasure of the contentment for a while. And then at some point, it would just like disappear, and I would just sort of like fall over the edge into a place of very deep, quiet stillness. And now when I did, with a much more concentrated mind, my field of vision was bright white. It was just like I was sitting in the middle of an open field on a bright sunny day with my eyes open and a white sheet over my head. Oh, just like the sutta say. All right. So clearly the Buddha was practicing the jhanas with more concentration than I had before that time. All right. You probably have to go on a long retreat to build up to that much concentration. It took me several weeks to get to there. But whatever level you can generate for getting into this quiet state is going to be quite useful. Okay, so now we're at the point, what are these used for? Often in the suttas, what you find after the description of the first four jhanas is, with a mind thus concentrated, clear, sharp, bright, malleable, wieldy, and given to imperturbability, one inclines and directs it to knowing and seeing. One understands thus, this is my body, made of material form, born of mother and father, composed of the four great elements, fed on rice and gruel, impermanent, subject to rubbing and pressing, dissolution and dispersion. And this is my consciousness, which is bound up with it and supported by it. The purpose of the jhanas is to generate a concentrated, clear, sharp, bright, malleable, wieldy mind that you can direct and incline to doing your insight practice, to knowing and seeing what's actually happening. To investigate things as they are. And the thing to investigate is this body and this mind. Now, if you're familiar with the Satipatthana Sutta, the four Satipatthanas, the four foundations of mindfulness, or probably more accurately, the four establishments of mindfulness, there's one part body and three parts mind. The jhanas are a warm-up exercise for insight practice. If you want to get enlightened, it's a difficult task. I'm assuming this is a wooden table. Yes, nice solid wooden table. Suppose you had a butter knife and you wanted to cut the table in two. It's going to be really difficult, right? I mean, you could do it, but it's going to be a lot of hard work. But suppose you got a whetstone and you sharpened up the butter knife and started cutting. You go pretty fast compared to not sharpening it. You'd make up all the time you wasted sharpening, right? It'd get dull again. You'd have to sharpen some more. But you could cut this table in two with a butter knife, provided you kept sharpening it. Still take a while. The jhanas are sharpening your mind, right? We normally look at the world from an egocentric perspective. Basically, can I eat that or will that eat me? Well, we get a little more sophisticated than that. But it's generally about, is this something that I want to get or is this something I need to push away? And I is the center of what's going on. And I know it looks like I am the center of the universe, but it turns out not to be the case. So if you can examine reality from a less egocentric perspective, you have a far better chance of actually seeing what's happening. Practicing the jhanas makes your ego go sit in the corner, shut up, and now you get a much better chance to see what's happening. You are all familiar with the fact that you do construct your ego with your thinking and emoting. Well, if you've been in the jhanic states, you shut off that thinking and emoting of ego construction. And when you begin examining, you have a much better chance of seeing what's going on. In the Tibetan tradition, the bodhisattva of wisdom is Manjushri. And he's usually depicted with a sword in his hand that he uses to cut the bonds of ignorance. Jhana practice is just sharpening Manjushri's sword. Haven't cut any bonds of ignorance yet. You've got to go out and wield your sharp mind. And you certainly don't want to sit there just sharpening, just doing concentration practice, because if you just sharpen a sword and do nothing else, it'll eventually disappear. All right? So The idea is get quiet and then investigate. And of course, when you start investigating, you begin losing the concentration, but that's okay. You'll gain some insight, and then you're going to have another meditation period where you can get quieter again and then investigate. So that's the four jhanas and what they're used for. We could quickly talk about the higher states, which became known as the higher jhanas. The fifth one is the realm of infinite space, is usually how it's translated. Limitless space or boundless space. It's basically a visualization that is triggered by, well, getting yourself up out of the well, getting your energy up a bit, and then imagining expanding something. What Ayakema told me was the boundaries of my being without limit, just further, further, further out, out, out. If you can stay focused on that outward expansion, then eventually a vast infinite space appears before you. That's the fifth jhana. Focus on it. You're not trying to visualize infinite space. You're trying to visualize your attention going out limitlessly. And then your mind goes into a state that you interpret as perceiving infinite space. If you're visual, you'll see the space. If you're not visual, well, since I'm visual, I can't really tell you, but my non-visual students, the ones who are auditory or kinesthetic, say they know there's a big space in front of them. Focus on the space. That's number five. The sixth, you can't be aware of a limitless space with a limited consciousness. Your consciousness must be as big as what you're conscious of, right? So shift your attention from the space to your consciousness of the space. Become aware of your awareness. Like you can become aware of the recorder right here, right? You just look at it, and now can you shift back and become aware of your awareness of the recorder? Right? Well, okay. When you're in the fifth jhana, become aware of your awareness of the infinite space. And it will feel like your mind gets very big. Your mind is as big as the space was. That's jhana number six, the realm of limitless consciousness. Jhana seven is the realm of nothingness, no-thingness. What is that consciousness conscious of? Well, after you've been there for 5 or 10 minutes, the sense of space is gone and they realize there's nothing it's conscious of. Put your attention on the nothing. What should happen is you get a sense of nothing before you, and as you stay with it, there's nothing next to it or beside it or further, or it's just nothing. Well, it's not the emptiness that's talked about in the Mahayana tradition. It's like taking the top off the cookie jar and there's nothing in there. It's that kind of nothing. Only this is, you've got your eyes closed and there's nothing. And then the eighth jhana is the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. Perception is the word sanya, means your ability to name things or identify things. So, bowl, striker, recorder, bottle, person. This is sanya, your ability to identify things. So, the eighth jhana is neither identifying or not identifying. I don't guess that helps a lot. Let's just say it's a really, really subtle state that doesn't have any characteristics by which you can describe it, but you know your mind is in a really, really subtle state that has no characteristics by which you can describe it. Luckily, it's fairly easy to find from the seventh jhana. You got a big nothing when you got a good seventh jhana. Just let it collapse and come to rest in front of your face and see if your mind goes into a state that you can't describe, but you can stay there. Probably the eighth jhana. Okay, so we got about another 20 minutes or so. I thought I would see if there are any questions.